Luba Maikiso joining us as well from Cape Town. Luba, good morning.
Morning, Howard. How are you?
Excellent. And you, tell us, how's it going down in Cape Town in what has seems to have become the epicenter of this disease? What are you guys doing?
I have no idea what we're doing wrong, because we look so good behind you guys and all of a sudden we're taking you. And I mean,
look,
we're almost double what you guys have.
Cape always look good compared to us guys. It's just a known thing. I've often thought that as I arrive in the airport in Cape Town, I'm going to be pulled aside and say, sorry, you need to lose another 5 kilos or you can't come back. So Cape Townians look good. I mean, that's the thing. But right now, they're not looking so good. It really is genuinely worrying.
It is. I think, I mean, from my own observations, I think the social distancing hasn't worked very well. I mean, I remember saying the first week of lockdown, Cape Town was a ghost city. And then with each successive week after that, I started seeing more and more cars on the road. I mean, I could travel with my permit, but the number of cars I started seeing on the road just started to increase, and the number of people who came shopping. And I think, I mean, you saw when we were allowed to take a run, somehow Cape Townians, I don't think we've adhered that well to the regulations. I know certainly the numbers are quite high in some of the townships. I think Khayelitsha has a couple of hundred people tested positive. So I think it was inevitable in the townships, but yes. I wasn't expecting, you know, the city citizens in the suburbs.
I want to defend. I want to defend Cape Townians, and I've been doing this all week. You know, we saw all those pictures of people on the promenade, and people were outraged. How could they? How would they? How should they? How dare they? But the reality is that I do think, like in the Sea Point areas, where you have high density or reasonably high density living because of all the apartments, people did adhere to it for 35 days. They then given 3 hours one morning, Friday morning, to go for a walk, of which 1 hour is probably dark, especially in Cape Town, and they're only allowed to go within 5 kilometers of their apartment. Where else would they go? It's not like everybody phoned each other and said, let's meet on the promenade. If I was there, I would have gone downstairs and I would have gone to the waterfront, because I would have thought it's breezy, it's more open, it's very wide, so there's a lot of space for people to move. I certainly wouldn't have thought that would have been a problem. And then we saw photos and everybody's up in arms. I really don't think it's fair to blame Cape Townians around that. Your thought?
I would have done something different. You know, maybe I avoid crowded places. So for me, my intuition had said to me that it was going to be busy, because that's where everybody wanted to go. I know, for instance, my kids would say to me, let's go and take a walk along the beach. Certainly if I lived in an apartment around Sea Point, I would have probably just found a route, you know, high level road or wherever main road, I would have walked there. I mean, it would have been fairly safe. But the question is then, when people got there, surely then you can see that it's a bit crowded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you
know, do you need then the police to come and tell you and say to you, Howard, I think there's a lot of you guys, so try plan B. You know, what I have found interesting is driving around and helping some people with feeding the homeless, is that even our homeless people in Cape Town have come back from where they were put by government, and they're back in the city, and you'll find guys with a makeshift kind of tent, and you'll find 3 or 4 people just or more. So that level, it seems to have collapsed. I mean, other cities have done well in getting the homeless people to shelters and to stay there. In Cape Town, it just never really took on. I mean, from day one, we've always had guys on the streets begging for food. And this is the question that I ask is why somehow are we responding differently to this? You know, the other challenge, Howard, that we don't talk about is that South Africa has quite a huge contingent of asylum seekers and so forth in South Africa. So I've been following a lot of posts about people who have come from Mozambique, who've come from Zim, who don't have an ID, but have a permit. They can't access anything. They can't get UIF. They can't get food parcels. And for me, apart from our growing numbers, the concern is, you know, what happens to those people? Because they've been forced to stay at home. A majority of them would be the guys on the street corner looking for a job. Some of them would be, especially in the African context, hairdressers, the ladies that do your hair. They aren't formally employed. They would work at a hair salon, and then they would, you know, get a com on what they did. Now, a lot of those people are sitting at home because you can't go and do your hair, but there's no UIF for them. and they don't have IDs. So you're starting to get a lot of those who are just, who fall in between the cracks. They don't qualify for the food parcels, don't qualify for UIF. And I think that's the real tragedy.
Yeah, Howard, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. But at the same time, you know, if you haven't contributed to UIF, you mustn't expect UIF to contribute back to you. There's a lot of people seem to be coming out of the woodwork, and we've seen it on some of the Zoom panels that we've done, to say, oh, well, I haven't been paying UIF, but I'd still like to claim. Well, you know, the reality is that's not the way the world works. Mm. People who are non-compliant tax-wise or didn't pay VAT, and all of a sudden they're trying to seek a government assistance, and government is saying to them, well, you know, guys, when it was due for you to pay, you didn't pay, and now you want to claim a benefit. Well, that's part of the reality.
I agree with you, but what would you say to a person who doesn't own the business so they can, you know, pay UIF directly? I'm employed at a place as a hairdresser, for argument's sakes, and you don't have me as, let's say, formally employed. I don't have an ID book to register for UIF, so I've been working for you or at your premises for a year or two. Now come lockdown, which is not my fault, and then you're saying, sorry, but I can't pay you. So it's not that I have refused to comply. You know, there has been no way that I could comply to paying UIF because you've made sure that I'm not a permanent employee or, you know. So I understand what you're saying about a company. But here we're dealing with an individual, you know, a breadwinner, a single parent or a mother or somebody like that. Now, what does that person do? Because there was no way for them to comply.
Mm. Yeah. No, I appreciate that there are people who fall between the cracks. We had on one of our panels on Saturday night, in fact, an organization that specifically looks at people like refugees and goes into churches and places where there are refugees, where people are unable to access food parcels and other government grants, and tries to help.
Yeah, I think we have to absolutely
but it's hard.
Be aware.
It's very hard, but it's hard for everyone at this moment.
I mean, so for
my
me,
neighborhood has, oh, sorry.
No, no, it's fine. For me, it's just there's a concern about now people breaking the rules. The people that now fall into those cracks, they end up breaking the rules. For example, hairdressers. I'm seeing a lot of people on social media all of a sudden with new hairstyles.
How dare they?
And I'm like,
how dare they? You see what some of us look like, Sanati.
And I'm like, I'm definitely sure you did not do your own braids. So stuff like that.
So there's a whole new thing of naming and shaming people
with new hairstyles
and nails.
Exactly.
Because I see what's
and
going on in
well.
My household with nails.
Exactly, and nails. Yes. Because I'm thinking there's no way your nails could have lasted, your manicure could have lasted for this long.
I noticed on Zoom that a lot of people's wrinkles seem to have disappeared over the last week.
Which is also completely unacceptable.
The Botox people are back.
Wow.
Well,
I think Zanati touches on something there, because if people have no other means to earn an income, then the laws are being broken. And that's the worry, is it's not regulated now. You know, are they able to observe, you know, the lockdown regulations? If you're doing somebody's hair, are the sanitizers, are the masks? Because this is operating under the radar, and there lies a problem.
It is a huge problem. It really is. I had a conversation with one of the producers at CakeNet, because they wanted me to talk about body language during the time of Corona, and I suggested that, which is perhaps why she never had me on her show, is that before she goes for sushi after lockdown, visit to, you know, the person that does her Botox wouldn't be a bad idea. But, which is, as I say, probably why I wasn't invited onto the show. The truth is that, I mean, we make fun of it. People with hair and nails and Botox and whatever else that people do to look after themselves. But the reality is these things are part of our lives, and they're important to us. And going to a hair salon or a nail salon or you're doing whatever you do for yourself makes you feel better about yourself. It's who you are. So I do appreciate the struggle that people are going through, and it might seem flippant and irrelevant to somebody who's struggling with food, but the reality is we don't live in an equal world, and we never have. And I'm not saying it's perfect, but that is the reality. Zanati and I were complaining that we can't exercise during the week between 6 and 9, and somebody on Twitter, self-righteous moron, said to me, well, just be grateful you have somewhere to go. And, you know, and I thought, wow, yeah, I guess that, you know, and their children starving in Africa.
Yeah, I was complaining about the fact that they're not selling exercise mats.
But I think that's outrageous. At
sports shops. No, honestly. But the truth is that what's essential to me isn't necessarily essential to you. So I think this is why there's just been a lot of, you know, people arguing about, you know, even with the cigarette thing. Yeah.
If I told you that tomorrow morning there was no risk and you had the morning to do whatever you want in a normal world just for the morning, what would you do?
Well, I wouldn't come to work and I'd go running.
Okay, you would go for a run.
Hold on, what's the question again?
You can do that Saturday or Sunday anyway.
And you can go for a walk. I mean, guys, I know you're complaining that you're working, you're doing the 6 to 9 gig, but you can still take a walk after that.
No,
I mean,
can't.
Don't go for a run. Don't look like you're going for a run, but Howard, go for a 5 kilometer walk.
No, we're not allowed.
But you can't do that.
No, you're not going for a run. Take a plastic bag and walk to a shop that's just quite far and go and buy some groceries. That's what I
mean.
Okay, and there is the answer as to why Cape Town is almost double Joburg.
No, Howard, but that's what I've done because I just decided I'm going to walk to, there's a Woolies at a garage down the road. It might be 2 km. I'm going to walk there and go and buy what I need and then walk back. And anyway, my local Woolies is closed now and they've said nothing, but we've heard that somebody tested positive. So I'm all out of Woolworths.
You know why I don't believe Luba's exercise go for a walk with a plastic bag statement?
Why's that?
He's in Cape Town and no one would ever use a plastic bag.
It's so true.
You would have to take a paper bag, Luba.
Absolutely.
I know, but I'm worried about being stopped on my way there. Not so much on the way back. The last time I pitched up there, I think I bought 2 ice creams for my daughter, and the lady looked at me and I said, believe me, these are essential items. And she just laughed and said, I said, these are essential items. And I walked off with my little Woolies bag and I had 2 ice creams.
So
I bet you ate them all on the way home.
No, it was Magnum. I actually got home with 2 of them intact. I got home with, you'll be impressed, Howard. I tried a keto diet and it lasted for 5 days.
Oh, that is a lot. Very, very nice. Very, very, very nice. Karen M says, Howard Saxton, did you know that Zoom has a facility to improve facial features?
Oh, okay. No. How?
So that explains all this Botox people you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. All right, I'm going to look at that a little bit later. And Colin says, Luba, what do you think of the smoking ban?
You know, I don't smoke, so I'm not very sympathetic. The challenge I have is I've got a sister-in-law who's an ENT specialist, and she says some of the things they see in people's lungs with this disease have been horrific. So maybe I listen to her. It's just that the way I see it is if smoking does kind of put you at risk, why go there? It's the same as alcohol. We're all taking the pain. You know, I don't smoke, but I enjoy my drink. I did stock up on some gin and whiskey. I've run out. I even turned to beer and I've run out of those and I think I've got 3 beers left. So I feel for the smokers, but I think it's for the general good. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories around it about the fact that, you know, she's against the Rupert's, but smugglers are making money. It's the same as the alcohol smugglers. Alcohol smuggling is thriving. But the tobacco smugglers were here before lockdown, and they were making a fair bit of money. So it's not as if she's created a new industry. I think it's unfortunate, but we're all taking pain, Howard, all of us. I mean, my 15-year-old couldn't go to Clicks and buy stuff for her nails. Do you know how upset that child was?
She even tried to go online
and order the stuff. You know, she tried to order online and then go and confront them and said, I'd placed this order a month ago. It never arrived. She tried every trick under the sun. And to her, this is a challenge. This is a life and death challenge.
I guess that's the whole point about the point about the rationality of the laws. We need to feel that they're rational. Somebody just sent me a message showing that in some shops you're not allowed to buy underwear. You know, like
I've heard of that. I think Howard, what I would say is this. There should have been a little bit more, maybe, if David was here to help people. Because if you're a smoker and you suddenly run out of smoking, you're almost being forced, wind of cigarettes or alcohol overnight. And generally, there would be a process that's managed to get you off, to wean you off alcohol, to wean you off cigarettes. Now, overnight, you're being weaned. And I suppose if you have withdrawal symptoms, I have no idea what they feel like. There's kind of no support system. to help you, to help you through that process. And I think that's the biggest challenge with people, is that people aren't coping because there's no one to turn to and say, how do I adjust to the sudden, you know, change that I have to, embrace?
Right.
I'm not saying government should, but I think there could have been maybe some help to say, you know what, if you run out of cigarettes or you're not going to smoke, this might help the cravings. This might make your life easier. And I think, certainly from an alcohol point of view, people are doing home brews and those can be vicious.
Yeah. Jenny says it's bizarre that one can buy a cold pie, but you can't buy a warm pie. And Karen M says the facial feature, the Zoom facial feature, is near the virtual background setting. Well, I'm very big into virtual backgrounds. I've been using them quite extensively, so I am going to look at that as well. I wouldn't mind a little bit of a makeover.
Howard, is this important in your life? To iron out wrinkles and blemishes?
Not really. But still, Luba, imagine if it was. No, I believe in looking good. I do believe in looking good. I think one has to be very careful that you don't look ridiculous.
Please, Howard, please leave that to Brad Pitt.
Yo, he's starting to look a bit silly, isn't he? And he's older than me, and he looks like 10 years younger than me. It's not okay, Zanati.
No, it's fine. You don't need it.
It's like that movie that... Did you see the movie that came out, the Irishman, that on Netflix?
No, I didn't watch it. I've heard it's very good, is it?
No, but they did the same thing. So they took De Niro, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci and kind of shed off, like, you know, decades of the guys. So they try to make them look a lot younger. It's a bit frightening. So just be careful. Don't shed off too many years, Howard. Just play around with just minor touches.
Yes. I have just gone on to Zoom to check.
I knew Howard was quiet for too long. He was quiet. I knew you were doing that. Yes. Tell us.
Touch up my appearance, it says.
Oh.
So what do you look like, Howard?
I want to know how I can get this in real life.
No, so take a photo and then exactly. Time is 8:56. Guys, this is where we have to love and leave you. A phenomenal and fun conversation. Thank you as always. We'll catch you all next week. Stay safe and stay healthy. It's 8:56.